G'day, welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm Graham Curry, your host from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle, and I successfully maintained that weight loss now coming up 2 years. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what it's like to living an intermittent fasting lifestyle. I'm also the author of the book, The Fasting Highway, which is a story of my journey overcoming chronic addiction to fast food and sugar and taking that walk from morbid obesity to normality. So sit back here with us on the Fasting Highway in the next few weeks and listen to some inspiring guests and some experts in the intermittent fasting community. And thank you for joining us. Enjoy the show.
G'day and welcome to episode 100 of the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm your guest host, Lou Collins, and joining me today is my amazing husband, Graham Curry, on this very special episode number 100. Today, we look back at Graham's incredible journey with intermittent fasting and delve into how he has developed it from a personal passion to be a global advocate for intermittent fasting. Graham is the best-selling author of The Fasting Highway, host of this podcast, and founder of the fast-growing online Facebook group of the same name. He's helped thousands of people all over the world start their intermittent fasting journey. We will also answer Facebook questions on intermittent fasting and find out what's in store in 2022 for Graham and The Fasting Highway. So welcome to the podcast, Graham. G'day, Graham, and welcome to the Fasting Highway.
Thank you so much, Lou. Pleasure to be here. 100th episode. I can't believe it. It's just been a whirlwind, really. To have you here in the guest host seat is such a joy to me. You were here in episode one, where you were a guest talking about what it was like to live with an intermittent faster, and you really gave a great insight into that. So, yeah, real pleasure to be here. Thanks.
No worries. Maybe just to start with, for people who perhaps don't know your story, can you give us a quick recap on exactly what happened to you with intermittent fasting?
Sure. Well, I'll make it brief. My journey is pretty well documented. If you Google me, Graham Curry Fasting, you'll find any number of podcasts that I've been on and relays my story. Also, if you're interested, you can get my book, The Fasting Highway. But I'll just go into it. Back in 2018, early in January, I sort of had a bit of a catalyst moment, really, which I think a lot of obese people do when they get to that tipping point where they just think, you know what, enough's enough, I'm done. And I certainly had that on a, sitting on a plane, jammed into an economy seat. I couldn't do up my seatbelt. I was taking up half a loose seat, and I thought, nah, I'm done. I got off the plane the other end, and for whatever reason, I was pretty laser-focused. And as people may or may not know, I was a chronic sugar and fast food addict. I dealt with those issues my whole life, low self-esteem, depression. I was so far away from happy, all because of food, really. My journey is pretty typical, I guess, of a lot of obese people, and I think that's why they can relate to it. And yeah, I had a lot of demons in my life. I had a pretty ordinary school life because of my obesity. I just got bigger and bigger as a teenager. And then I got sick when I was 19. I had what's called rheumatic fever. I lost a lot of weight. So from 19 through to about 25, I had a fantastic life. Everything sort of fell into place with me. It was just a totally different life without the weight. And then over the years, it just crept back on, and I just kept getting bigger and bigger, and my addiction to sugar and fast food worsened. Just to put you in the picture, I was a person that was going through the drive-through 3-4 times a day. I had no off switch. I was a closet eater. I would hide things from my family, what I was eating. I would eat a meal before I ate a meal. I was constantly snacking. I was drinking beverages like they were going out of fashion, like Coke, that sort of thing. I had no idea in those days Coke had 10 teaspoons of sugar in one can. Well, I was having 6 or 7 of those a day, so 70 teaspoons of sugar. There was a reason why I was obese, and I knew that. And then once I discovered how to get around the sugar and fast food addiction and actually took the time to learn about what was in food, a lot of things become clearer. But, and so roll the clock forward, I've been maintaining now some coming up 2.5 years in a range of about 1 to 3 kilos, which is about 2 to 5 pounds. Been pretty successful at that. A couple of spikes along the way, but I'm able to rein them in pretty quickly by having that goal range. And I found maintaining fairly easy, and it's just part of my life now. It's just what I do, and I love it, and I'm passionate about it, and I really do think that it is a cure for things like the obesity epidemic out there. And my passion now is to share it forward and hopefully help others, and I can do that in the coming years.
That's great. It's certainly been a wild ride to live that with you and just see the transformation in so many areas of your life. And I'm so proud of you. It's not funny. So we're going to take some listener questions later in the podcast. But first, can you just talk a bit about the podcast and your book and the beautiful online community that you have embraced and developed? How did all that start? How did that come about?
Well, I guess the catalyst for that really was my heart was breaking when I was seeing obese people and knowing the battle that they were living. And I just thought, well, how can I help them? I mean, you just can't walk up to somebody on the street or in a shopping center and say, hey, I noticed that you're obese. Have you heard about intermittent fasting? You just can't do that. You've got to get punched out or something's going to happen to you. So I thought, well, if I start a podcast about fasting and I talk about it and I can interview others, and I have done that now, close to over 100 interviews I've done, then maybe they can hear that and get the message and start themselves. And that's why I wrote the book as well. That was my motivation. I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to put this down because it's so great. And I thought my story was going to be relatable to people. And, you know, they had a lot of struggles just like me. And I'm just a normal, everyday, working class bloke. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not anything. I'm just Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. And I like to think I'm a pretty down-to-earth sort of bloke. And I think my journey really mirror images of so many other obese people from all over the world. So the book and the podcast, certainly the motivation was to get the message out and help others.
I think you've been pretty amazed at the response to your book and to the podcast as well. And people have just embraced the way you are so honest and so forthright about exactly what's happened to you and how you had those struggles and overcame them. I think that's really the key as to why everyone feels so comfortable sharing their own stories with you, because you relate to them so well.
Yeah, look, I guess I tried to keep my book as simple as possible. I didn't throw in a whole heap of science because there's a lot of information about the science out there. I mean, if you go to Google Scholar and put in intermittent fasting papers, you'll get all the science you need. And really, people like Dr. Jason Fung out there, they handle the science side of things. But he, of course, hasn't been obese in his life. So when you read about somebody that has been obese and have had the same struggles as you, or if you've had some of those issues I talked about, sugar addiction, fast food addiction, closet eating, all the things that weight stopped you doing in your life, then yeah, I guess my book was relatable. But yeah, it was a total shock to me, the response to it. Never in a million years did I think I'd be Graham Curry and calling myself a best-selling author. And in the first sort of few weeks when it hit the charts and it went up to number one new release in 3 or 4 categories. And I guess the one I'm most proudest of is the Australian biographies. I mean, there were some real heroes behind me on that chart, like people we've grown up here in Australia with, like Olivia Newton-John and Jimmy Barnes and Thomas Keneally and Ann Doe and all sorts of people that Australian listeners would know. So that was a really humbling experience. And I just sort of couldn't get my head around it at first. And, you know, over the last year, we've sold thousands of copies of The Fasting Highway all around the world. And I get messages from people regularly about it and from all points of the globe. And a couple of ones I'd like to highlight that really hit me in the heart big time was one guy from Antarctica. He was a scientist in a research station. And he said, hey, Graham, I'm reading your book down here in Antarctica. I'm getting on fasting and I really love it. And I was just thinking, who sits in Antarctica in a little ice truck or something reading my book? It was just weird. And then the other one was I got a message from a group in Norway that sitting on a Saturday morning and they were having a book club. And my book was their feature of the day. And I'm thinking of all these Norwegian people sitting in this beautiful cafe in Norway somewhere, like, you know, talking about my book. So Yeah, those sorts of things are very humbling, and all the pictures that people in my group and others that have bought the book post from all corners of the globe, and they show me their city, and it's just been mind-blowing, overwhelming at times and super humbling. But I'm glad it's resonated, and I guess it has resonated because many, many people out there have had the same struggles that I have. Obesity is a real bummer. It really is, and it's holds a lot of us up in our lives. We've missed out on a lot because of it, and now we're living our best lives free of obesity, and those on the journey are going to get there too.
Great. And why do you think fasting was so successful for you? I know that you've tried a million other diets, pills, shakes, low calorie this, starve yourself that. How come intermittent fasting worked for you when those diets didn't?
Oh, I guess intermittent fasting is sustainable. That's why, because it's simple. I mean, you eat in the pattern of time, you fast for a period, and then you eat till you're full and satisfied, you stop, you eat a high quality meal, and you stop and do it the same day. So the simplicity of intermittent fasting, you can do every single day without stopping. Whereas diets, yes, a lot of diets do work and you do lose weight initially, but who wants to eat soup all their life, or who wants to count everything, or who wants to weigh things, or who wants to, you know, pound the pavement until you're nearly dead to try and lose some weight? I mean, intermittent fasting is probably the most simplest thing that you can do for weight loss. And it's also not just about weight loss, we know that. And I think we'll talk about that, but the health benefits of intermittent fasting are more sustainable than any diet will ever be.
So let's just delve into the benefits for a second. I know that fasting has changed your life, but what's been the best thing about your fasting journey? The weight loss or the other benefits that you've experienced that I've seen firsthand because of intermittent fasting?
Oh, look, obviously the weight loss has been fantastic having that off my body, but it's the health benefits that have really blown my mind, to be truthful. You know, I've talked about my psoriasis before, or something I had for 20 years on my hands, my knees, my elbows, completely vanished after 6 months of intermittent fasting. And I was told I was never going to get rid of that by three specialists. They point blank, they just said, "Graham, you will never get rid of that psoriasis. You have it for the rest of your life." Okay, what if I change my diet? What if I lose weight? It won't make a difference. It's a skin condition. It's not going to help. And now I'm fully convinced that not only intermittent fasting, but changing the way I ate and getting that sugar and fast food out of my life got rid of that psoriasis. I have no doubt about that. Arthritic fingers, couldn't open my hands in the mornings in the wintertime, completely gone. Aches, pains, eyesight improved. Mental clarity, energy when I'm driving long distances for work. When I was obese, I used to have to pull over on the side of the road. Otherwise, I was going to crash because I was so tired. I was always looking for an afternoon nap when I was obese. All those types of things are now gone. So, you know, the health benefits, I don't take any medication now. I'm a 58-year-old man. I'm pretty happy about that. And yeah, I think the health benefits certainly are one of the prime reasons why people should do intermittent fasting.
Great. I know that when I first met you, you used to hide your hands from me and fold your arms over your big tummy that now you don't have. And you were so conscious about the psoriasis on your hands. And when that disappeared, how you marveled at the change in your skin and how now it's just completely normal and you don't fold your arms anymore. And you've got lovely big hands, darling.
Thank you, sweetie. Yeah, it is. It has been life-changing, that. I mean, I was so embarrassed about it. Just going to a business meeting, I always used to sit with my hands under the desk. And one of the things that when that happened and the psoriasis vanished, I would meet people that knew me fairly well and they'd look at me and they'd say, "What's happened to that psoriasis, all that big rash you used to have all over your hands and your elbows and knees and that? Where's that gone?" I said, "Well, it's completely vanished." And they were amazed. And a lot of those people actually took up intermittent fasting. But I mean, I've talked to dozens of people on this podcast now about all sorts of health benefits and NSVs. Some of them wacky, some of them just unbelievable, and some of them are just amazing. I mean, things like people's hair growing back, which blows my mind. I talked to a guy who was in a bad car accident. He had massive scarring. That started fading. It's nearly gone. all those types of things that people talk about, the NSVs or the non-scale victories, and just general things as well that you don't really think about for obese people, the struggle that they have. Just things like going to the movies and knowing you're not going to break the chairs, going to a restaurant, knowing you're not going to break the seats. All those sorts of benefits as well. Your shoelaces undone in the supermarket. You bend down and you do it up without effort. All those little things really add up. And I know some people record hundreds and hundreds of these, and they happen basically every day.
That's great. That's really good, isn't it? So I know that we've had some hilarious times around your intermittent fasting journey. Can you tell us what's been the funniest thing that's happened to you on your fasting journey? I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, share it. Share the story.
Well, we had a fire on our property a couple of summers back, and I was burning off a pile, actually, a big pile of wood, which we were allowed to. We had a permit from the local fire brigade. I thought it was a bit warmer day myself, but they said, yeah, go for it. So one of our trees started lighting up, and anything, things started happening, and we had a couple of hoses set up, and Lou was hitting the fire front from one side and I was hitting the fire front from the other. But what had happened was, because I'd lost so much weight, my jeans fell down around my ankles. So here I am standing with my jeans around my ankles in my undies fighting this fire, and Lou's absolutely losing it, and I'm screaming at Lou, ring the fire brigade, ring the fire brigade. And I'm trying to run around with the hose and the pants around my ankles. So, yeah, I went and bought some jeans the next day.
It was pretty funny. Okay, let's move into some questions that the Facebook group and have submitted, things that they're interested in and want to know a bit more about. The first set are around the book. What was the hardest part about writing the book?
Oh, many, really. And thanks, Amanda, for that question. Look, I think just opening up about and being vulnerable, really. I mean, some of those things in that book, nobody knew them except me before I published it. Now a lot of people know it. My school life was terrible. UFC cage fighting basically every day, fighting bullies off because of my obesity. It was a really sad time. As I got bigger and bigger, I got sort of bullied more and more at school. It was an awful time. A lot of people talk about their school years being their best years. Well, my school years were my worst years, to be truthful. I couldn't wait to get out of the place fast enough. I left one day short of my 15th birthday, and I started work the next day, and I've never looked back as far as work goes. I've never been unemployed in my life. But, and just talking about, you know, how vulnerable you were as a closet eater, like sitting in your car crying at the drive-thru because you knew you shouldn't be there, but you were. And it was sometimes the second or third time in that day you were there, you know, and always carrying cash on me and not using my cards and hiding the accounts from my family and my wife. And so she didn't see how many times I was going through the drive-thru, or I'd get bags of chips and I'd stuff the packets down the back of the couch, or I'd put them in every other place that people couldn't find them, all because I wanted to hide it. I'd do things like, you know, getting a loaf of bread and eating the majority of that loaf of bread, and then I'd go down the shop and I'd buy another one and I'd replace it so people didn't see that I'd eaten that loaf of bread. Same as a packet of biscuits. I mean, there was no off button. It wasn't two biscuits, it was a whole packet. And I'd just go and replace it. And that's the sort of behavior I was doing. And I did that not just for a short time, I did that for decades. And so beating that has been fantastic. Talking about that in the book, opening up and just sharing my experience really about what the journey's like and insight into that, what to do when you're struggling. I talk about the 15 steps of self-investigation, how to work through that in the book. Also just really trying to get that message out that an ordinary bloke from Australia can beat obesity, sugar addiction, fast food addiction, problems with it in his life. You can too. And also letting people get the message how to deal with things like vacations, deal with naysayers, negative people in your life. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there, but the hardest part was definitely talking about my early life and being vulnerable.
I think watching you go through that process and writing that book, it definitely stirred up a lot of emotion for you, and it was a real challenge. And I think at times you really struggled with whether you should put things in the book or not put things in the book. And in the end, what you've done is an extraordinary thing, because I know and I see the amount of people that contact you and say thank you because they relate and they are doing the same things themselves. And I don't think people really talk about the closet, things like the closet eating or perhaps how difficult it is to hide that from your family. So I know people are incredibly grateful that you did that and were so honest and raw in the book. I think it's really been very helpful for them.
Yeah, look, it has, and I'm very proud that it's done that. But yeah, it's not easy, and I figured, well, this has got to be warts and all. I can't sort of sugarcoat stuff, so to speak, and not tell people about what it's actually like. The withdrawal from sugar addiction, as you know, Lou, was probably one of the most horrific 2 weeks of my life. I don't know what it's like to withdraw from drug addiction, but withdrawing from a very, very chronic sugar and fast food addiction was pure hell. As Lou said in the first podcast, I ended up in bed for 2 days with a doona over my head, the whole thing going on, voices shouting. And I apologized to Lou so many times because I was so snappy with her. It was awful, wasn't it, Lou?
It wasn't your best or finest moment, but we got through it, and you were determined. You know, I've never seen you so determined to do something. So, you know, we just wrote it out and it got easier and easier, and then now we just don't even think about it. So did you ever think that the book would become a bestseller?
Oh, God, no. No, I mean, self-publishing books on Amazon is actually quite tricky. Majority of people that self-publish books would sell probably less than 150 copies, if that, in its lifetime. And so to do what it has been mind-blowing. And, you know, publishing companies will start sniffing around you and then you've had a bit of success. But no, the thing that blew me away was when it was getting sold in places like Japan, Germany, Spain, France. You know, and I mentioned the guys in Antarctica, and I have a majority of my followers in the group are probably up in America, and I've had very strong support from America and the UK, so thank you up there. And I think people really just resonated with it. They wanted something that was simple and follow, not overcomplicated. I mean, I've read some books where I couldn't get through the first 20 pages because I just didn't understand what they were talking about. And I couldn't go to Google every sort of page to try and work out what the words meant. So I really was quite deliberate in that. I wanted to make it so people could follow it. But in answer to your question, never in a million years did I think it would do what it did.
Okay. So the big question that everyone always asks you lately, and I think it's because they just love the sound of your Australian voice, will there be an audible version of The Fasting Highway?
Well, I've been reluctant to do that for a couple of reasons, but I can announce today on the 100th episode that yes, there will be. I have recorded one, and it will be out in 2022, early part of the year. And so look out for that. And I think the audible version is really good because if you did resonate with the book and you loved it and you're having a tough day and you're in your car or you're going for a walk or you're at your office, you can just plug it in and listen to a few chapters and just get that sort of reinforcement of what you read in the book. And if you enjoyed it and you loved the book, then I guess the audible version's a good complement to that. But I was a bit reluctant to do it because I wasn't really confident as a narrator. I didn't think my voice was strong enough. I'm not the Morgan Freeman type voice that people love in books. So yeah, again, it's just going to be me talking. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, I think it's going to be great. I love your accent. So will there be a follow-up book?
Yes, I am planning that as well. But that will be a bit of a different slant to it. It'll be more about life since I lost the weight. Also the mindset of maintenance, the mindset of fasting. There'll be a bit of background like I had in the first book, but I don't want to make that a repetitive book just for the sake of putting the book out there to sell copies. I want it to be sort of useful to people and as a complement to my first book. So yeah, probably towards the back half of 2022, there'll probably be another book.
You're going to be busy.
Yes, for a change.
And what's the, let's just talk about podcasting for a minute. What's the hardest thing about podcasting?
Oh, many things. Podcasters have so many challenges. Internet connection is probably the biggest one. You're talking to somebody on the other side of the world. Sometimes that's quite tricky, lining that up. A few times you get overlaps. You get more editing sometimes in some podcasts than others, so that can take time. It is quite a time-consuming process, podcasting. I mean, one sort of 45, 50-minute podcast actually takes about 4 hours to produce in a week. So that's quite a lot of time. And as most people know, I don't have commercials in my podcast. I've been approached several times about it, but we'll see how that goes. I think that might change in the future. But also, I think just trying to get the best out of the guests that you're talking to, and also be really kind to them and humble and listening to their stories and not over talking when they're talking. You probably notice a lot of my podcasts is the guests speak about 70 or 80% of the time. And I think as a host that's really great, that people want to hear about them, not me.
I think so too. So let's get back to some more fasting questions. Do you have tough fasting days now that you've been an intermittent faster for a couple of years?
Yeah, well, coming up 4 years next year, Lou. Absolutely. Of course I do. Who doesn't? I mean, there are some days where I just think, you know what, it also is about true hunger as well. You've got to develop that sense of what is true hunger. I mean, we have belly hunger where we just go, oh man, I'm so hungry I could chase a horse and eat the jockey. And you walk past a cafe or a bakery and you see people out there and they're drinking and they're eating and you go, oh man, I'd just like to start a bit earlier today and I'm hungry. And then there's that feeling where you don't feel quite right, you're a bit off center, or you're maybe even a bit shaky, and that sort of hunger. And that's when you truly got to listen to your body and just open your window and eat. So yeah, there are days that I struggle, but they're very rare, but I've had them and I've listened to my body and I've opened my window and I've ate those days.
Great. And tell us about when you're on holidays. How does that work with fasting?
Oh, look, it's got to be flexible, and vacations and holidays are part of that. I mean, you heard me talk about we went to Japan. I mean, we can't really talk about recent vacations too much because we haven't been able to leave the state, let alone the country. But our last big vacation was to Japan, and you know, some days, most days I fasted till around 16 hours, but occasionally we'd get up and we'd go past a seafood market and a guy would have a blowtorch out, you know, cooking scallops. So those sorts of experiences, you just want to try. You're in Tokyo, one of the most exciting cities in the world. I mean, when you go back to your home, you just go straight back to what you were doing before. So if you do have a few sort of longer windows on holidays, don't beat yourself up over it, because when you come back and you stick to your routine, you're going to be back to where you were before in no time.
So you just get straight back into it when we come home, and the ship seems to right. And then the extra weight that you may have put on if you've eaten other things just seems to disappear.
Yeah, well, with using Japan as an example, I mean, we were there for 3 weeks for the Rugby World Cup in 2019. I think I put on about 4 or 5 pounds in 3 weeks. I only weighed myself once at a hot spring where I found a scale. Lou wouldn't let me take the scales on holidays, have you heard me talk about before? But yeah, it was quite interesting that I sort of thought that I hadn't put on a lot of weight, and within 3 days I was back to the same weight that I was. And when I was in Japan, I was eating quite a lot, and mostly we were drinking alcohol every day. We were traveling with friends and they were big party people, and we had a hell of a time, didn't we?
It was good fun. Really good fun. So just tell us how different your diet is nowadays to the diet that you had before you were an intermittent faster. Do you eat different foods, or is it the same, or what have you cut out, or just tell us what that looks like for you.
Oh, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it? My diet before I was an intermittent faster was probably one of the worst diets of anybody on this planet. It was disgusting, really, when I think back. But now, the longer I go with intermittent fasting, it's more about quality. And I don't care if I spend $25 on a good steak or a really nice meal. It's got to be quality for me. It's got to be what I call window worthy. If I'm only eating that once a day, and when I talk about eating once a day, I just wanted to clarify that too. What I mean by that with a nomad lifestyle is some people think you just have one plate of food, and that's called OPAD, O-P-A-D. OMAD can be a variation of that, where I open with a snack most days and then I'll have my meal. And sometimes I might have a dessert, and that might consist of something like a bit of yogurt and some fruit. And then I'll have a coffee with cream to close. So that's typically like a bit of like a restaurant style three-course meal most days. So that's my OMAD.
Yeah. And tell us about your fitness. That's an area that you've really developed since you've lost your weight. Tell us a bit about that journey and how that started and what you do now.
Oh, look, again, chalk and cheese. My fitness was pretty ordinary when I was an obese man. But the weird thing was I was still able to, you know, generally walk around and that sort of thing. But yeah, I was getting to that point where I was getting lazier and lazier, if you like, purely by the fact that my weight was just crushing me. It wasn't possible for me to go out for a run. It wasn't possible. I couldn't swim. I'd just sink. I couldn't do all those things when I was 360 pounds. It just didn't work. But so over the last few years, yeah, I have been working on that. I've been walking. Just recently, I just went on a big hike down the Cape to Cape tracks, 135 kilometres, some very brutal terrain, very tough. In actual fact, one of our family members, Lou's daughter, Elle, she has a Pilates business called Perks of Pilates on Instagram if you want to follow her. But yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable, really. And she looked at that parts of that track when she was on holidays, and she rang her mother here and said, "Mum," she said, "Graham is not going to be able to do this." She said, "It's so hard," and she's a super fit person. But I went down there and I did it, and you know, and I'm really proud of that. I did it with some buddies. We did it over a few days. We've still got about 20 Ks to go of a section. One of my buddies got injured. So yeah, we'll be doing that soon. But my fitness levels are probably 300% on what they were.
Yeah. I remember when we couldn't walk around the block when you first started. And now doing that Cape to Cape. Cape, it is not an easy track. And it was so worried, and you just nailed it and came back and felt really good. You didn't sort of, you said, "Oh, I could have gone another couple of days." So it's an incredible change in your mindset about what's possible. You look at things now and think, "I'm going to do that." Whereas before, you would have had a million reasons not to even start to try. So that's a big difference to me, what I see in you.
Oh, look, absolutely. And it is mindset. I mean, I remember one section of that track, it was like getting upwards of 30 degrees. We're in a forestry, walking up a 3 kilometre steep hill, rugged terrain, and it was just the sun. There was no air. And I was really digging at the bottom of the well. I was pulling on every last strain that I had of my physical well-being to get up that hill. And the thing is, you've got to get up that hill, otherwise you're going to be in trouble. And it's the same with the beach walking that we were doing. 6-8 kilometre long stretches of beaches, some on soft sand. And that's hard to do when you've got packs on your back and all that sort of thing. But it was just a walk of redemption, really, for all those years that I'd missed out on things as an obese person. Things I couldn't do, running races, at school with the kids, swimming races, parents races, all those things, lots of things I couldn't go on, helicopter rides. You name it, just things I couldn't do because my obesity stopped me from doing it. But now the world's my oyster, and look out, because I'm going to be hiking some of the great tracks of the world, and I'm also going to be doing some other very physical activity in the future.
I know that you absolutely love to travel, and all these people that you have met in the podcasts and on the Facebook group around the world, I know you want to catch up with them. So we'll be tootling off whenever we can if they change things for us soon. Hopefully that happens.
Oh, look, yeah, I can't wait. And I had a big trip to America planned actually prior to the pandemic. I was going on the cruise in the Bahamas with Jin Stevens and a few of her mob from the DDD group. But yeah, I think once I get over to America, I have a road trip planned. Yeah, I really do want to catch up with a lot of people that I've met through the Fasting Highway. So yeah, if you've got a spare couch or an RV and a driver, me and Lou would welcome it. Thanks.
So I think because I'm in the chair today, I'm just going to fill the listeners in on some things that they may not know about you. and some things that they might find interesting. So you started off your career as a butcher.
I did, funny enough. As I described that day when I left school, I started the next day as an apprentice butcher. That didn't last that long, actually. The guy who employed me was the manager of the shop, and then the owner came in one day and he said to him, and I heard him say it, he said, "What's that fat slob doing out the front of the shop?" And so, yeah, sort of they got rid of me, and I went on and did some other jobs, and I started butchering again in another place, and I worked there for about 8 years. That was great. I haven't really had that many jobs in my life. Been in the publishing game before. I used to do magazines and travel guides. Also, now I work in agriculture research. I've been doing that for some 12 years. I work for farming associations who investigate different things for farmers and run on farm trials and also organise events and conferences. That's basically what I do for work now. And yeah, I'm looking forward to what the future holds.
So you might not also know that Graham is an absolute rugby union fanatic. He watches rugby. If there's any rugby game on around the world, he will have it on and watching. And we've been lucky enough to get tickets to go to the Rugby World Cup in 2023. And I think that's probably the only way I could get to Paris is via the rugby. So if you're a rugby fan out there, we'll see you in Paris.
Yeah, look, I do love rugby. It's a passion of mine. I've been brought up with it my whole life. My early life was in New Zealand, and obviously New Zealand's a rugby-loving country. So rugby probably is my favourite thing to do and switch off when I'm not talking about fasting. And I guess when I'm, you know, podcasting, I'm running the group and I'm doing other things, mentoring people, that sort of thing, you sort of get to a stage where you've got to have an outlet away from fasting, and that's my relaxation is the rugby.
Yeah, you love it. So the other thing that you do, which is one of my favourite things about you, is sing. Graham will sing every morning. He sings in the shower. He sings making a morning cup of tea. He sings at night. It's just a lovely thing to have in my house, you singing.
Well, I don't know how lovely the singing is, Lou, but
No, it's lovely.
I do fancy myself as a bit of a car karaoke king. And again, that's a thing I like to do to switch off. And I haven't really done much public karaoke. I think I did some drunk karaoke in Japan in one of the bars in Shinjuku one night, and while the rugby was on. And I think that went down pretty well. But yeah, singing is something I find as an outlet as well. But, you know, I think that just comes from being happier too. And I think, you know, the way you feel, your mood, that sort of thing, you get up in the morning, you start talking to yourself positively, and I think that's one of the real big changes in me, that I talk to myself a lot more positively than I used to. I look in the mirror now, I like what I see, I don't sort of, you know, shudder at what I see and hate what I see and beat myself up and say I'm so ugly or I'm so fat or I'm so this or that. I actually talk to myself in a very positive mood, and that really helps me get through the day, and it sets the tone for the day. So I'd urge people out there, start your day, love yourself and talk to yourself, not in an egotistical way, but just say to yourself, you know what, you're a good person.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do. It sets you up for the day. The other thing about you that people might not know is, and I'm actually particularly jealous of this fantastic characteristic that you have, is that you've got a photographic memory. You can remember names, faces, places, anything. It's extraordinary what's in your brain.
Yeah, it sort of scares me a bit at times. And then other times I can't remember what I did 2 minutes ago. But yeah, I particularly remember when I started fasting how sharp my mind was. And I'd be recalling these things from early in my childhood. I mean, I remember one time I was in bed and at night and I woke up and I just started rattling through this roll call of my class when I was 8 years old. Every morning they used to do a roll call and read every single person's name out. And I could remember every single person's name, and that was from 50 years ago. And that sort of blew my mind a bit. But just the recall that I have now has really gone up another level, and it's quite scary at times.
It's extraordinary what you remember. It really is. The other thing that you may not know about Graham is that he's actually 6'5" and his feet are size 15. Shoes can be tricky.
They can be. I've got a good grip on the earth, that's for sure. I guess when people see you before and after photos, they don't really get that scale because, you know, I'm 6'5" tall guy. I was 160 kilos or north of 350 pounds. I was a big imposing bloke. And I guess I am still quite a large guy now. I mean, I'm still 6'5". I'm just not as big as I was. And when I was carrying that weight, I remember I'd walk around corners and people would freak out. And kids would shudder and they'd jump out of the way. They'd be scared. I was like a giant because I had this outer shell on me that was so huge. And now I just find that people don't look at me at all. And that's one thing I've really found about my journey is just how people see you so differently and treat you differently. And I know a lot of people say to me, oh, you must have had a different demeanor when you were overweight and you're obese. But as Lou can allude to, I was never an aloof person. I was always a very sociable person. I was the life of the party. I was always super polite to shop attendants when I'd go in, but I wasn't getting the same back. And that's totally changed.
So I think that's about all we're going to chat about today. And I would just like to say from my family to your family, a very beautiful and happy, merry, peaceful holiday time. And how proud I am of you.
Oh, look, without you, Lou, I would never have done this. That's the fact. And people always ask me, what pushes you? What motivates you every day? Why do you do this? You know, why do you keep going? Why do you keep your health so good? And it's because of the woman I'm sitting right next to, who I love so much. I can't tell you how much I love her. I loved her from the minute I saw her. Typical Mills and Boons type novel. Arrow through the heart, the whole works. I was gone for all money, and it never happened to me before in my life, ever. And I just wanted to spend time with you, and I just thought, well, if I don't get this weight off, I'm going to die. And I just love every minute of every day that I'm with you, and I want that to continue for the rest of my life. So if you want a catalyst, look for it, whether it be your partner, whether it be someone in your family, whether it be something you want to do, an adventure or a journey. There's always that goal to shoot for. But for me, love was my main catalyst. And I can't wait to share that love with other people as well, right around the world, and continue the journey. Next year, probably we'll be doing a couple of things with the Fasting Highway. And so stay tuned for that. But thanks very much today, Lou, for hosting.
That's my pleasure.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Graham. That was a really fun chat. And I'm so proud and well done on everything you've achieved with the Fasting Highway and to get to the 100th episode of the podcast. Also, a big shout out to the Fasting Highway Facebook group who provided some of the questions for today. Thank you for your support of Graham. I know it has been an incredibly important part of his journey and it's grown into an amazing group. That's really helping everyone. Until next week, be safe and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.